Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Caller, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Troy Caller from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California, where I lead a 9-person design team specializing in executive presentations at live stage events and have been awarded as a Microsoft MVP for PowerPoint since 2004.
Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey. We're a boutique visual communications firm specializing in presentation design, data visualization, and training. And I've been a Microsoft MVP since 2014.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm located in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hey, I'm excited. We have hit the number 5 spot. That is, we've hit episode number 5. Right now, I have no idea how the podcast ranks on iTunes, but our social media coordinator here at TLC has told me that I need to ask everyone to please write a review on iTunes, because apparently iTunes only ranks podcasts based on the number of reviews, preferably 5-star reviews if you think it's worthy of that. So there's a lot of things it does, but that's the only way it can rank us. So basically, let's move on to what's happening. Nolan, what's happening in New York City?
Well, ironically, even though I lived in Manhattan for 20 years and I can still see it from see the skyline from my street, I don't have a whole lot of New York clients. I only have a couple. Most of my clients are throughout the country, and I'm headed out early Sunday for the first of two back-to-back trips to San Francisco to do some training for some clients out there.
Fantastic. Travel is hopefully fun for you still.
Red eyes aren't.
Okay, yeah. But San Francisco is a wonderful place. Sandy, what's happening in the Midwest?
At the risk of sounding like a broken record, I am still preparing for a large conference that will be happening at the end of April. So the good news is we're coming into the exciting part here, and that's going to be off my plate soon.
And you actually go to the conference and coordinate and help your team, your executives,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's a total of 30 presenters we coach from January through April.
Oh, I didn't realize this. So you actually work with the entire presenting?
Yes.
Wow, that's wonderful. I did not realize that.
Yeah, it's a really great gig.
So what's happening for us at TLC, it's kind of two worlds. One, in the operations, it's all about organization. And I'm really actually excited about this one. We're working on a new visual workload calendar. It basically shows us every designer and what days they're in the office, but then it identifies how much design work has been allocated to them. And it lets us see who has too much and who can have more and say yes or no to projects as they come in. So I'm kind of excited about that. But on the more exciting stuff, it's all about the presentation. We have a great 3-day conference coming up, and it has 5 screens. And, you know, 5 screens, it's really cool. It sounds, you know, bigger than most. But what makes it really big is the outer screens, the left and the right screens. They're actually 5K each. So that's 5,450 pixels wide by 1080 tall. They're 74 feet wide and 15 feet high. And then there's 3 other screens in the middle, which is where the presentations typically go. So, and we're running it on those side screens. They're all run from PowerPoint. So this is not your typical PowerPoint, but PowerPoint can do these things, and it's really cool. And what's even makes it a little bit more cool is on the tech end of things, we're running them off of the MacBook Pro desktops, the new round cylinder ones, where they have 6 heads out. So we're actually utilizing those, and we're combining the left and right screens into one really ultra wide presentation setup. So it's just this phenomenal, super long, thin strip.
Even though you're running off Macs, you're still actually running a PowerPoint for a PC.
We're running Parallels and Windows and Office 2016, and it works really, really well. It's a pretty cool scenario. So yeah, we're actually using with the Windows side, we're just using those Macs because they have they're super powerful, and they have built-in, graphics cards that give you 6 outputs, which is great, 3 for each side. And, you know, it's the smaller screens, they're not really that much smaller. They're 26 feet wide by 15 feet tall each. So there's nothing really small about the show, but it is fun. O font. That's our topic today. It's definitely not something I'd run around my house saying in front of my kids, but we have a lot to say about fonts. Microsoft standard fonts, Adobe Creative Cloud Typekit, Google Web fonts, custom fonts from websites. You know, what's a presentation to use? Will a font work on a Mac, Windows, iOS, or web app presentation software? What are the advantages and pitfalls of using custom fonts? Are Microsoft Office fonts safe to use? Or maybe a better way to say it is, can you use those fonts on the Mac, or can you use Mac OS fonts on the Windows side or anywhere else? Today, we decided to discuss our best practices for font use in presentations.
Okay, before we dive into everything, we're going to go over the basics of how fonts work. Some people know it, some people don't. Certainly some of our clients are not aware of it. And this will go partially towards explaining why fonts can be such a pain in the ass when it comes to presentation. In general, for most desktop software of any kind, fonts exist separate from the program and from individual files. So you have your program file, and then you have your font file. They're two separate things. They're not combined. So if you want to use a specific font in PowerPoint or Word or Photoshop or any other program, that font has to live somewhere locally on your computer, a place you can get to it. And if you take your PowerPoint or Photoshop file to a different computer, things may not look the way you want them to if that computer doesn't have access to that proper font file installed. So again, most people know this, but we all have clients who just don't understand that fonts are separate from their PowerPoint or Keynote file.
Exactly. Let me just kind of go outside of the presentation world to kind of explain fonts from my perspective. Print design, which is where TLC Creative began, is much more evolved in font use than any of the current presentation apps. And InDesign, which is the industry standard for print and layout design, as an application, we spend a lot of time in it here at TLC, and it's a different approach to letting its users know about fonts and potential issues before they surprise you. And a lot of those would be great to see in presentations or presentation software. So first, the primary output for InDesign is a print-ready file. And when you output it, it has everything in it. It's locked in place. The fonts are not an issue any longer. It could be a high-res image or a high-res PDF. And then PDFs have this great feature of being able to actually embed fonts into a document in a way that works well and doesn't create a lot of the issues that like PowerPoint does when it tries to embed. So if I'm sending an editable InDesign file, I'm going to have that same issue that Nolan was talking about. The fonts used are separate files. They have to be sent along with it. And usually we're sending this to a printer, and they're going to have no problem with this whole scenario of understanding fonts. But what InDesign does to facilitate that is they have a package option. So you open up the file on your computer, everything's there. You have the fonts, you have the pictures, everything is associated with it. And you do the export a package. And what that does is anything that's not embedded, let me rephrase that. InDesign doesn't actually embed things. It actually links everything. So the package feature takes every linked asset, images, fonts, and anything else, and puts them into a new folder ready to hand off. So that folder has everything guaranteed when it moves to another computer. It's just a much nicer solution than the whole manual process of looking at a PowerPoint file and making sure you've got everything, or opening up on a computer and seeing what doesn't work. The last point on this is if the InDesign file is opened on another computer and it is missing something, something's not there, the user experience is fantastic compared to PowerPoint. In this case, what InDesign really does is it makes everyone aware of issues like fonts not being available before there is a real issue, like printing 40,000 brochures only to find a font was missing and refloat all the text, ruining the print piece. The analogy would be you got the CEO's presentation for the big event, you move it to a new computer to run it, and you don't actually know that there's a font missing, and you can't really see where the font was missing. And now during the live event, the presentation is going to be viewed by 4,000 people is just kind of ruined because the font issues crept up and there wasn't a way to test it ahead of time, or you weren't told about it. So And I should say it's any Adobe application. It's not just InDesign, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign. They all do the same thing. They give you notice about missing fonts. And the option to find the font when the dialogue comes up is just, well, Nolan references an external file. So the dialogue is going to say, hey, go find an external file with this font name. It gives you the ability to replace the font, or in my opinion, the absolute best feature is that everywhere a font that's missing is utilized, it highlights it. So you can go through a document and visually see what has been given a default font because it wasn't available. So there's just a lot of options there in the print world. I would love to see coming over to the presentation world just to make our lives that much more, well, easier.
Yeah, there's just a lot of opaqueness when it comes to, you know, there being a problem with a presentation file with regard to fonts.
You
just
from Microsoft's perspective, Microsoft is
exactly
yeah,
they're not really good about explaining.
Well, they say, hey, a font's missing, and that's the end of the dialogue. On the Adobe side, where I was just going, they say, hey, a font's missing, and it's here, here, here. Here's your font choices, and what do you want to do about it? And we want to work on it. And it just, it walks you through the process and makes it a process instead of an opaque dead end.
So I'm just going to say, state for our listeners out there that the bad news is, based on what you two have just said, PowerPoint and Keynote just simply don't have the ability to include fonts the way Adobe programs or PDFs do. And we'll get into the options for embedding and outline other solutions shortly, but I just wanted to summarize everything that you went into about print and the wonderful Adobe products. They're just not there for most presentation software.
Right. So what are the types of fonts that exist in the world? And we'll talk about that and maybe get some semantics out of the way. Very often when it comes to PowerPoint specifically, you'll hear people recommend that you use only Microsoft Standard or safe fonts or system fonts. What are those?
Well, today, even the I'm putting up air quotes here, the Microsoft Standard font is not as easy as it used to be just a few years ago because everybody worked in their own bubble. So if I was working on a Windows platform and a specific version of PowerPoint, I would know what fonts came, or I could identify. There are lists out there. They would say, hey, these are the fonts that are guaranteed to be in this bubble. If you're working on Mac and you're working on whatever version of PowerPoint on the Mac, you could identify which fonts were there. So it was a little bit easier to identify what a safe font was. The bigger issues is like a Mac user using a Mac OS font, it's not going to map to anything on a Windows side. But the Office installed fonts on a Mac, they were all designed to have mapped options on a Windows side. So there was some cross, it should be a seamless experience. It wasn't always, but it's really, really close and it's much better. But everyone was almost guaranteed to have an available set of fonts that we could call the safe fonts. Now, I did a post on my blog a couple of years ago now, and it was all about fonts, and we created this grid that said, if you have this Windows operating system, you have these fonts. And we went through all the operating systems. We also said, if you have this version of PowerPoint, 2003, 2007, I believe it ended at 2010. We said, these are the fonts that are installed with that. So you could come up with a list of fonts. It's a little outdated. I'll put a reference to it in the show notes. Maybe someday we'll get around to kind of updating that again with the newer operating system stuff. But it's just a difficult topic to say use a safe font. I think the fonts are shrinking in what you would consider safe because there's so many operating systems and devices to utilize now.
Yeah, it's a moving target. And speaking of the devices, I'm just going to list them. You know, each device has a different operating system. I'm creating a presentation with fonts on a Windows desktop and sending it to a client to proof on their Android device. Now, of course, we talked about this in our last podcast. We need a PDF in that case. But let's look at the devices. There's the Windows desktop, Windows mobile, Windows web apps, Mac desktop, iOS, and like I mentioned, Android. So we've got more environments than ever.
And I want to go back to you, Troy. You listed a couple of lists, your website and Echo's list. There's also another list called the Periodic Table of Fonts put out by Johanna Renvall at presentitude.com/fonts. Now, as you said, there's sort of things around the edges changing, there still is a set of kind of core fonts, your Arials, your Verdanas, your Tahomas, that we can still be 99% certain are, you know, going to be all over the place. And Johanna's put together this a couple of awesome PDFs showing all these fonts, which to choose, which you can choose. It's not going to be 100% guaranteed, but I'd say it's about 99%. And also she has a document that shows good combinations. So if you want to pair like a two different fonts that are safe from a design perspective, it's a great thing to go to. We'll put it in the show notes, but you can also go to presentitude.com/fonts.
That sounds awesome. I haven't checked that out, but it's great for a designer to give advice that could be utilized by a non-designer, because lots of presentations don't get handed off to the presentation design professional. That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. So if that's only, you know, Johanna's put together like 44 fonts, but there, and give or take, let's say it's between 40 and 50 these days, there are millions of other fonts in the world, which what are those?
Custom fonts. Generally, anything that's not a Microsoft standard font or a font that's typically not installed on a computer by default, right?
Right. A custom. You might also hear the word proprietary font. I end up using that term sometimes.
So why, tell me, give me examples of when you guys use custom fonts.
Custom fonts are, well, to be unique and different is kind of like the main use to use custom fonts, but a lot of times it could be the corporate style guide. It's a non-Microsoft font, but it's their standard. So therefore it still falls into that custom font range, because you got to make sure the font is installed. And then for me, it's a big one is, you know, specialty events. You know, they're one-off events. We want to make them unique. We're allowed to be going different design directions, may not so conservative. You know, there's a lot there. I know if a file is not going to be distributed as a Microsoft file, so maybe it's that one-off presentation where we control everything from start to finish, or maybe it's printed collateral or distributed as a PDF. To me, those are all good options for adding some design flair without increasing the risk of a display failure situation.
Yeah. You also might want to use a font just because it's a better font. It's a more professional looking font. Fonts are not free out there. I mean, the good ones, the ones that are, and they're always creating new fonts, like they cost money. So if you wanted to use Gotham, which is a very popular font for graphic designers, you have to go pay a few $100 to download that. And the reason it's not on your Windows machine when you take it home from the store is because Microsoft didn't want to pay the few $100 to license that font. So that's why we're stuck with some maybe less than ideal fonts.
Well, if you want to go into the custom fonts, do each of us use custom fonts?
I rarely use them. Usually, if I do, it's usually for one-off keynote presentations in a situation where I can control the installation of a font on a production computer. In my experience, it's just become too risky at a corporate level. And while some companies have been willing to purchase the fonts, there are limitations. All of a sudden, with their willingness to purchase the font, they send it to an outside supplier, vendor, whatever, even a client, and all of a sudden they have font issues. So there's no guarantee that a font can be embedded in a presentation. I'm just recommending over and over and over again that we fall back to the standards.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about distributing fonts, let's say a company does say, hey, you know, we'll spend a few $1,000s to license this font for our whole company. Great. That does not give them the license to give that font to another company to show their presentation. I mean, there are licensing restrictions on these fonts.
And what a hassle, even if they would give some another company.
And then the other company's IT won't let them install fonts, and that's where we get to. So I sometimes use proprietary or custom fonts, but not as often as I would like for clients because of, you know, it's always a headache. And as you said, you know, it's not worth the inevitable issue of them saying, oh, I tried to show it on my kid's laptop that I borrowed and the font wasn't there. Well, of course it wasn't. So occasionally I'll use them for my own presentations where I control the hardware and the software and everything. But even then I'm slowly moving away from that, because if I go into a company and for whatever reason I want to or have to show it on their computer, their hardware, I just can't be guaranteed that the font's going to be there or that I can even install that font, even if I have it on a thumb drive. And even I did a webinar yesterday off my Mac using one of my standard, you know, custom fonts, And I restarted my machine right before it and stupidly didn't check every slide. And I got to a couple slides and the font didn't load for whatever reason. Mm. It substituted Arial and things didn't look right. Of course, a couple of hours later, the font loaded and now it's fine.
After the webinar, of course. Yeah. For me, there's a couple of scenarios for using custom fonts. If it's the corporate or the client style guide font, it's a yes, we'll use it because it's standard to the company, but because it's not a Microsoft standard font or an operating system standard font, it's still a custom font. It has to be installed. You have to assure it's there. But that's one scenario, pretty common for me to see, where we're going to use a non-standard font, but it's standard to that company. And then the other one would be, like Sandy was referencing, one-off presentations. We're in control of the presentation design and the event computers, and I'm pretty confident in using it there. But then you run into the issue we kind of talked about in an earlier episode about proofing. How do I get a proof to the client that doesn't have the custom font to see what we designed and approve it? So there's some scenarios there, but those are the big ones. But in general, I'm going to advise against it just to limit display failure situations. There's just too many things that can go wrong with custom fonts if it's not a controlled environment.
I agree.
So, I mean, on the occasions that I do use custom fonts, I'm going to pull them from my personal collection that, you know, I've collected and purchased, you know, over many, many years, and it includes the Adobe Font Folio that had, you know, hundreds and hundreds or a thousand fonts. And occasionally I'll purchase or download a free font. Recently, someone wanted me to make use of the Back to the Future font for a graphic. So I found a free version that someone made, and I did that grudgingly. I didn't want to make it look like Back to the Future, but they had their hearts set on it. So fine. So where do you guys get fonts?
So for example, for my clients, in the case of Kellogg, the Kellogg typeface is licensed very well.
Is it custom to Kellogg? Did they have it created for them?
Yes, they did. Cool. And also then other clients will spec in a font. So in that case, I will buy my own license to use it.
We use the Adobe Typekit a lot more. It's pretty funny. You mentioned Adobe Font Folio. I haven't heard that used in a while.
I know.
We've got, we own it. We have it. Yeah, we have it. We've got that and several thousand other fonts in our font collection, but Adobe's made it easy and on a technical side a little bit difficult. But so the Adobe Typekit is available to the whole team now, and that's been really, really easier to make use of custom fonts over the years. You know, we've kind of amassed this huge font library from things we've purchased, so we kind of have a big internal resource. But another resource is the clients. In March, I was just on a project with, I was at the New York Auto Show, and they car company I was working with, they had their own custom font. Sounds very similar to the Kellogg thing. So Hyundai has their own font called Hyundai, and that's what we use because it was their one. Yeah, it was very simple. It was very straightforward. It was a nice, clean corporate font, but it was just unique to them. So the presentations used a custom font provided by the client. So font formats are something we should go over as well, but to give us enough time to cover the important topics, I had my team do a technical overview of the major font formats. And if you look on the May 2nd, 2016 blog post at the PowerPoint blog, you're going to find a summary of all of them.
I like your team. Mm-hmm. The quick summary is that there are three main formats, PostScript, OpenType, and TrueType. And again, you can go and sort of read up on all the technical. PostScript is kind of the old, that's going away. The new ones you're going to see are OpenType and TrueType. That's even slowly going away.
And I'll add that no matter what the file format for styling fonts, they're divided into three categories. I feel like I'm a teacher here, but everybody, there's serif, which are letters and symbols that have the little lines attached to the end of the stroke, sans serif, and if I'm saying that with my Minnesota accent, you can correct me. In French, means without, so you're not going to have those little flags at the end of the end of each stroke. And the third category is really a catch-all called fancy. And these are the fun.
I don't think I've ever heard it called fancy.
I know,
but I like that. Decorative.
Decorative, yeah, yep. Decorative. Fancy was
Troy, have you?
Yeah, that's that. I'm trying to think of the Mac font program. and that's the category. It was called Fancy.
Okay.
No. Is pre font book. I'll have to think it up.
I know what you're talking about. I used to use that.
Yeah, and Fancy was the category. It was basically anything that didn't fall into the bubble type and
handwritten
cursive. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. So now that we totally stepped on Sandy, yes, three types. So the next step would be, how do you install a custom font? And that's really tricky because now we have multiple operating systems and multiple devices. And the question is, can you even install a custom font on a particular operating system or device's operating system? So again, I had the TLC team do a little research. We put together a blog post. So if you're looking for a quick reference on how to install a font on Windows desktop, Mac desktop, the iPad or iPhone, so the iOS environment, Android OS, which would be phone, tablet, and the Chromebooks, Windows Mobile for the phones. Check out the May 9th, 2016 post at the Presentation Podcast, and we'll let you go there to figure it out, because if you're going to use a custom font, you're going to know how to install it.
Troy, that's just fantastic.
Thank you. I'm sure my team would love to hear that too.
It is. It really is. And, I mean, even though the Windows 10, it's so easy to install a custom font. I just think this is a wonderful resource. So everyone, check it out.
And the good news is that almost every app or version of software can recognize font formats in some way, right? There are few exceptions. PowerPoint on Windows, so Windows desktop, it can use TrueType and OpenType fonts, but it can't recognize PostScript fonts. And fonts do need to be installed before PowerPoint is open. So if if you're realizing, oh, I'm missing the font, and you go install it, you've got to close down and then reopen PowerPoint. Keynote on the Mac can use any type font, TrueType, OpenType, PostScript as well. And Keynote can definitely, you can install a font while the application is open. It's much, much quicker.
I wonder if that's what happened with your webinar. The font didn't load or something. Anyways, so on the less common apps, there are some other scenarios for that. Prezi is a good example. They have their own font library. It's 50-ish or so fonts. They have their own names. And if you want to go to the Prezi support site, we'll include a link there. But they have a really good, very simple to use diagram that lists off all of their fonts and kind of what the equivalents are. So Prezi has one called Arimo. It'll say its equivalent is Arial. It's basically a copy of Arial, but it's in their world and it works. Now the PowerPoint iOS is doing something new. We'll see how far this evolves, but it's pretty cool, but it's really frustrating if you don't know what's happening. So if you're on PowerPoint on your iPhone or your iPad, basically fonts are dynamically loaded. So unlike the desktop where you cannot add a new font and have it recognized until you restart the program, on the iOS devices, there are only a few fonts that are available when you install it. And I think that's mainly to limit the download size. And then it keeps the download size smaller. But when a presentation is opened, it looks for what fonts are used in it. If it's not there, it dynamically loads it, which is kind of weird because you can be looking at a slide and all of a sudden the slide re-renders and it looks different because the font was actually installed that it was spec'd for. So this is kind of a going forward type of thing. I think we're going to see more of this, but there's issues. If you don't have Wi-Fi, you're not going to get those fonts dynamically installed. If you know you're going to be at a place with no Wi-Fi, you want to open the presentation and it basically buffers or temporarily installs those fonts for a certain amount of time. I haven't been able to identify it. It's not really based on a daily, hey, these fonts are installed for 5 days or 30 days. I think it's, hey, you can have this many custom fonts, and when a new one's added, we're going to bump off the one that's been used the least in the past number of days. So there isn't really a custom font install option, and its lists of fonts kind of dynamically changes. So that's a new paradigm that everybody should be aware of, because it's frustrating if you don't know what it was. On the Android devices, I think the only font available is actually the Android OS font. Sandy, when you open a presentation, because I know you look at them on your phone on occasion, do you get to see other Microsoft fonts even? Not custom fonts, but Microsoft fonts?
I have not had the opportunity to test other Microsoft fonts.
We will check on that.
Yes.
And then on the Windows Mobile side, it's kind of the same thing as the iOS. It's dynamically loading fonts. It has a preset list of like 20 or so fonts from Microsoft that's added when it's in base install. And then it adds additional Microsoft fonts dynamically, but there is no custom font option. So there are some limitations depending on where this presentation is going to be used that can, you know, be problematic.
What are the apps you guys are usually using?
We really focus on PowerPoint for Windows. I personally use iOS.
Even when you're running it off a Mac.
Even when I'm running it off a Mac, yeah. It's exactly it. I personally use iOS for PowerPoint on my iPhone for reviewing decks literally daily. But fonts are an issue, as mm-hmm. are many other things. But it's you know, with a diverse project load, I can say we use almost every app or device, you know, a couple of times a month. Well, we don't really use Google Docs ever, and Prezi has just declined to the point where we haven't really made use of it in, well, a number of months, if not a year. Yeah, but
I haven't been doing Prezi. I would love to meet somebody who's made a Google presentation in the last year. Oh. Sorry.
Some student. Oh, some student. Sure has.
Well, students all went to Prezi because I think it's more cool. Dynamic. Okay. And it's easier. Okay, what do you use, Nolan?
Mostly PowerPoint on the Mac, 2016 and 2011. I will go to the PC through Parallels.
And I'm mostly Windows.
PowerPoint for Windows?
Yes, yeah. PowerPoint is, yes, that was a given, I guess.
It's okay. There's no shame.
I cross over to the Mac now and then.
Well, let's switch over to talking. Let's go a little more detailed. Adobe Typekit fonts. Adobe used to sell a font library, which Nolan and I both referenced. We may be the only two people listening to this that'll remember that. But now they're dynamically available.
Meaning web-based. They're
web-based. Yeah. Well, and it gets tricky. They are, when you're connected, online connection available, but you don't go to a website per se. It's done through I guess you do. Okay, so now I'm really messing this up. But the Adobe Font Library, one of the largest collections available, and it's included with the Adobe Creative Cloud subscription. So now instead of having to buy an additional library, it's included with your however much you pay for your subscription. Adobe moved their font library, thousands of fonts, away from the local install to, I guess we call it a web-based install, but it installs it to your local system. So
it's a web-based catalog that it pulls and temporarily downloads it to your computer for use, right?
Correct. Yes. Each device that you have a subscription to can install those fonts. It's a little different than Google Web Fonts. Google Web Fonts were completely dynamic or completely local. You could physically download the file. They're very cool in that you can actually download them and use them as a regular font, or they can be web dynamically available.
Like Open Sans. Isn't that a Google font that everyone uses?
I would have to look. Let's go with yes.
Yes.
So, and I would say the Google fonts are kind of similar to what Microsoft's now doing with their mobile device fonts. I think the Microsoft ones may a little more evolve, but the idea is there. So Adobe Typekit, though, does have a lot of nuances to its use. So again, just to save time here, go to the May 4th, 2016 post at the PowerPoint blog. It's all about Adobe Typekit and what we kind of discovered.
But Troy, can you use Adobe Typekit fonts in PowerPoint?
You actually can, but you got to know the limitations of it. So I'll just say that Adobe fonts are great, but if I create it and I hand it to you and you don't have Adobe Creative Cloud, you're not going to get those fonts. There's no way for me to physically give you the font. There's no way for me to dynamically have you load it. So yes, it can use it, but there are some big limitations in how it's going to be utilized.
Yeah. The font, I mean, if you haven't caught on by now, this whole font landscape is constantly changing and is still probably a few years behind where it should be. But Adobe's doing great work and Google, obviously, and we're getting there. But fonts have always been an issue and we're seeing better and better solutions come down the road.
Hopefully everybody will play together at one point. So yeah. Quick survey. Do you use Adobe Creative Cloud, Nolan?
Yeah, all the time.
What applications in particular?
InDesign is actually, I love InDesign. I do that a lot. Photoshop, Illustrator. I used to teach InDesign. InDesign is actually my favorite program to use. It's just powerful and cool. And
totally agree. I think it's one of the most versatile programs around.
I used to use Quark.
I was going to mention that and I wasn't going to. Yeah, we were huge Quark Express users. Never PageMaker. Hey, Sandy, do you use Adobe Creative Cloud?
I do. But I usually use it as a backup to PowerPoint because I create a lot of my own graphics in PowerPoint. So when I need support, I use Photoshop and Illustrator.
Oh, that's a whole topic we should do of how to do Adobe type things in PowerPoint.
Exactly.
We can make the tandem topic. How much did you use Photoshop 5 or 10 years ago, and how much do you use it now? Because it's decreased. Microsoft's done a good job. And then for us on Adobe Creative Cloud, yes, we use it lots and lots. Let's jump over to that whole topic we've tried to elude, which is embedding fonts in PowerPoint. Pros and cons. Do you do it?
Never ever will I embed a font. Again, I've just been too scarred by corrupted and irretrievable files using it in the past.
I'm not scarred, but I haven't embedded them for a long time. I still do it on occasion, but the really big deal about embedding fonts is that you can't do it in a template, right?
Correct.
And PowerPoint doesn't warn you if the font is not embedded, et cetera, et cetera. You know what? I would recommend to everyone to take a look at the book called Building PowerPoint Templates by Echo Swinford and Julie Terberg. They have a chapter on fonts. They have a lot of information on fonts. And I think it's very, very, I would just recommend it for everyone.
We will totally add a link to that. It is a phenomenal book. There are two phenomenal people. You know, the font embedding, do we do it? It is literally written into our internal best practices that it's something we never do. Save as or file saves take longer. Mm-hmm. File sizes get larger. Not all fonts can be embedded. So even if you use it, you don't know which ones were embedded always. It's just a huge...
Types, but not all true types.
Right. Yeah, well, it depends on the licensing. Yeah, licensing info by the company does it. And it's an inciting riot levels of rage when a user tries to open a presentation with embedded fonts. Right. And then Microsoft Legal says, hey, because you don't own the font that's in there or you don't have access to it, we'll just let you look at the slides, but you can't edit them. You can't rearrange them. You can't even move them to another presentation because we're going to lock it down on you. It's absolutely something we avoid at all costs.
Yeah, and the Mac doesn't support embedding or reading embedded fonts in presentations. So it's a complete non-starter on the Mac. I want to give a shout out to a new app that somebody came out with a few months ago called Presentation Font Embedder. And that's an app for the Mac that actually the first iteration of it allowed you to embed fonts, not for the sake of the Mac, but for your PC friend. So if you were working on a Mac, you wanted to embed fonts and then send it to somebody on a PC for them to use, it allowed you to do that. But again, you could only embed certain ones. It was still problematic. You couldn't read them yourself. But the most recent iteration, they also added another, what they call, quote, embedding. But what it actually does is, let's say you have these custom fonts, you have a custom handwritten font you want to use. Instead of embedding it, it actually converts it to images automatically throughout the presentation. So you don't have to go through each one and do paste as PNG or paste as TIFF. So it'll automatically turn all of a certain font into images.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there are ways to do it on the PC, but this is sort of the first like real third-party apps for Mac. It's all drag and drop. You can find it on the App Store. I gave a few copies away on my blog a while ago.
That's great.
And they're developing it. They're hopefully going to make it even better in the future.
Well, hey, let's move away from the technical for a while and start talking about design.
Yay, design.
If you're going to use a custom font, when do you use it most often?
Okay, so I'm going to make the assumption it's a presentation that's going to be distributed.
Okay.
And if I really want to use a custom font for something, it would be the opening theme or the title slide. That's a great place to add some design flair. It's, you know, not content critical. It's not going to have a lot of dense text to read. So if something goes wrong, it's not going to be a presentation killer. But then for presentations we control, it's nice to use a slightly different font. Just you know, for the overall font theme so that you have some differentiation. And it just, there's a lot of great fonts to work with. They're not all, you know, there's a lot of great corporate fonts to work with, and you just have to know the environment. But mm-hmm. the opening theme slide and title slide, probably the biggest areas we use, I'll use a custom font just to kind of set things, set the tone.
I think I'm pretty much the same. I call that graphic text, you know, when you're using not body copy, but you're creating text and you want it to have a graphic impact.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Pretty much the same.
I like using handwritten fonts for things mm-hmm. like, you know, like I'll have a post-it note in a presentation. I want it handwritten. So I'll use a handwritten font and either leave it as is or, you know, turn it into an image or like a notation on a Polaroid image effect. I'll do that a lot. I just did that yesterday.
Okay. So those would fall into the fancy or decorative font family.
Yes, that's me being fancy.
Okay, tip. Here's a tip for using a custom font in one instance. So if we're going to design a title slide that has a custom font, but we don't want to distribute the custom font and make sure everybody has it, we kind of do this little trick. And I think, Sandy, you do this as well. When the presentation's approved, I will copy and then paste as special that text box. So I end up with a ping image of that font. It's not needed for the anyone else now because it's an actual image. And I'll do one of two things. One is I could just delete the original text box with a custom font, or what I prefer to do is just go into the selection pane and I just hide that text box. So if the client comes back and says, "Oh, we want to say this," great. I just delete the ping image. Well, actually, I'll probably move it aside. I'll turn on that one. I'll re-edit it and do the same thing again. If there's animation, I'll pick it up from the original one, and then I'll delete it. So I kind of like use a little hidden version of the text.
Wow. Okay. So I know Nolan does that and I have done it in the past, but the idea that you hide it in the selection pane, I think that's pretty ingenious.
It does show up when you open a file as a missing font, which is, you know, if we had a real dialogue, it would be really funny to actually see how Microsoft would handle showing you where a font was used that's not visible. There's a scenario for you, Microsoft, to think about. But yeah, it's really, really handy. It's just a fun tip.
Yeah, so that, you know, you're doing it manually on text box by text box with a paste of special. That presentation font embedder, that'll do it on the whole presentation. And there's all on the PC side, there's also a plugin that does something similar. Sandy, you use that, right?
I do. It's called Text to Outline by Jamie Garoche.
Right. Oh,
love that thing. Mm-hmm.
So that does something similar to font embedder. And it's pretty powerful too. All right. Here's a big question about fonts that I get all the time. People just, they're like, yeah, I don't care about TrueType, OpenType. Which font should I use, Nolan? Right. They just want to know what are the best fonts for presentation. So, you know, when it comes to standard fonts, I tend to keep going back to the well on Century Gothic and Georgia. I think those work well together. Georgia's actually a font like print graphic designers use. So it's a really good serif font. Arial Black, believe it or not, I think is a really good headline font that I use a lot, much better than regular Arial. Non-standard fonts, I tend to shuffle between thin ones like Universe, Avenir, Helvetica Neue, sometimes Gotham. And my favorite handwriting font that I use all the time is called Complete in Him. And I think you can find it for free out there. It's called Complete in Him. Use it all the time.
I think we're going to have to include a link to that one so everybody can see what that is. Is there a incomplete with her? What's the opposite?
I have no idea.
Incomplete without her. Sorry, that was
You had me at font.
Yes.
What do you like, Sandy?
Oh, okay. So for the safe fonts, I too like Georgia a lot. I use Tahoma, and Arial isn't a favorite, but I use it a lot. I really like Microsoft's, is it called Sego?
Oh, I was hoping Sego? You'd tell me how that's pronounced.
Okay.
I go Sego.
I pronounce it Sego. I think Echo pronounces it Sego. So we're going to have to get a lesson on that someday. But I really like that. I like that font a lot.
And that's a new one. That's a relatively new one.
Relatively new. I think it came out with PowerPoint 2013. I don't use it a lot. I've been using it a little bit more often lately. And you mentioned handwriting fonts. I love Paris.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out. Mm-hmm. Huh. It's really hard to find a good handwriting font. Mm-hmm. It's even harder. It's even harder to find a good cursive font. If you find one, please let me know.
I will take your suggestions because I just basically avoid them. Yeah, I just find something wrong with everyone. So within Microsoft Safe Fonts, I like to use Century Gothic a lot and Tahoma. Calibri is the new Arial. It was kind of put into the operating system with the Windows Vista, but I like it over Arial. Some of its kerning is a little bit nicer, in my opinion. So it's for, you know, general corporate use. That's probably my go-to font. I like sans serif fonts more than serif fonts, but if I'm going to go custom, I really like Proxima Nova. It's one I kind of gravitate to. It has a lot of custom weights and I just use it on a lot of projects. So, but you know, the sky's the limit. There's so many available out there.
And Nolan, I think you mentioned Avenir for a custom font. I think that's beautiful.
Oh yeah. I love Avenir. I feel like it's like very 5 years ago, but I think it's
right. It's still right.
Just like Gotham is going out of fashion now. Mm-hmm.
I think I use that with Quark Express just to date it.
Avenir or Gotham.
Avenir. Okay. Avenir. Oh, it's great. It's in the tool shed for sure. Mm-hmm.
So going back to our proofing episode, if you know what presentation you're designing uses a custom font, how do you assure that your client is seeing it as you designed it?
Well, that's the whole question.
Yeah.
Is the custom font it's a custom font. It's a non-standard Microsoft font. Question for me is it a custom font to the client? So it may be that non-standard Microsoft font, but if it's standard to the client, then I'm the one that needs to be worried. So I know the client's going to have it and I know we're good to go. But if it's, if it's standard to them or if not, I will almost always on the first proof, if they're getting an editable PowerPoint, which, you know, my opinion is we start with PDFs, but I will send the PowerPoint and a PDF with a note that, hey, if anything looks off, please reference the PDF to make sure you're seeing the way it was originally designed and let me know what you're seeing that's different, because there may be something we need to correct on the technical side, because I'm just really paranoid if I'm not there in person reviewing it, that what they're reviewing and going to give feedback on isn't the way it was created. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, PDF's the safest way to go.
It is. I'm the same. And of course, there is the add-in that we mentioned earlier. I mentioned, I think, every podcast, but it's a little impractical when you have an entire presentation using a custom font, although there is a convert all option now.
You know what? I actually used that. Well, I used that same concept on another add-in developers thing, but that was to lock the content for a sales presentation where they didn't want the content to be copied. So I actually used it as a feature to meet a client request. We want to give out slides. People can reorder. They can add some stuff. But we don't want them for regulation purposes to be able to change any of our text.
And good
it was
idea.
A really cool. So I'm assuming Jamie's one would do the same thing. What is Big Noodle? I heard you reference that before, Sandy.
Okay. Well, I wasn't going to bring it up because the time I did it, and I honestly don't know why I did it, why I didn't just use a PDF. But this was an example of a company buying their font, and it was Big Noodle.
And it was the name of a font.
Yes. And they didn't have it. They were going to purchase it. They hadn't purchased it yet. And so I built their presentation in it and ended up so they could proof it, converting the entire content, all the text, using Jamie's add-in.
Cool. Oh, awesome. So yeah. You actually sent them an editable file that was not editable, but it looked exactly like you intended.
Exactly.
Huh. Okay, cool.
All right, cool.
I think I would avoid a font called Big Noodle personally.
It was beautiful. It's really beautiful.
So Christmas is right around the corner. So what are our Christmas wishes for Microsoft on fonts?
Should we clarify that this really is... We're only recording this a week out from when it's going to post. Hey,
I'm expecting it to snow next week. That's what
exactly.
I'm
oh,
got it. Oh, you guys have weather that's not spring-like. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I just drove back from Las Vegas today. It was windy and beautiful. I'm in Southern California, and we're debating on if we should go hang out by the pool tonight. So I think my biggest wish for Microsoft is where I started at the very beginning, a real asset report that lists what fonts are used in a presentation, where they are used in a presentation, and a functional replace font tool that would alleviate so many issues with fonts, custom fonts in presentations.
Yeah, I'd like just a pop-up warning when you open the file right up front saying, hey, here's the problem. Here's what's missing.
And I just want them to be on par with other design software.
It's a very small ask.
Yeah, very small.
That's moving in the right direction. So to wrap up all about fonts, or what we've decided to discuss about fonts, because there are so many things out there, fonts, they're a big part of the design and styling process of a presentation. And I feel that at this current time, all presentation apps need to evolve and expand their font capabilities to make this a more rewarding experience, not a failure or frustration experience. That being said, fonts are like animation. There is such a thing as too much. So don't use too many fonts, because I've seen that issue come up as well.
Yeah, I'll just echo that. If you ask any graphic designer how many fonts they have on their computer, they're going to say thousands, and they do. And then ask them how many they use on a regular basis, even if they don't use presentation. It's not going to be more than four or five. So less is more.
And I'm going to take a little different slant on this. I'm putting a message out to Microsoft, putting it kindly, euphemistically. They have an immense opportunity. I've got air quotes going here for improvement when it comes to fonts.
Air quotes on opportunity or improvement.
Yeah, there you go. Opportunity for improvement. And so as a result, like you two, I'm going to be limiting my use of any non-safe, non-standard font until PowerPoint can be on a par with other programs. And I'm not holding my breath. And I don't mean that negatively. It's just, it's a big challenge that they're facing. And it's limiting us, but it's where I am right now.
And with that, we'll wrap up our episode on fonts.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.